What's up, you guys? Sean Rossat, managing editor, FightfulSelect.com, where you guys are right now. I want to thank you all so much for being a part of Fightful Select, for subscribing to Fightful Select. It is the most direct way to support us, and we have some big news off the bat that I will go ahead and get into for you guys. The Revival. I'll tell you guys what I know about The Revival, what I've heard, all that stuff. Now, a lot of the people that I talk to in WWE, quite frankly, they won't give me this type of information immediately because it goes against locker room code, to be quite honest with you. But when I find out about it, they'll open up to me about it. And several wrestlers that I spoke to did not have any idea about what was going on, but said it wouldn't be a surprise. So what I was told was this morning, Wednesday, January 16th, was it looks like The Revival may have quit on Monday. And I think, looks like they may have quit. So, of course, I had to do some digging, had to do some asking, and was told there was a situation that unfolded at Monday Night Raw that led to them looking like they quit. And WWE is fearful that they have. Why is WWE fearful? You know, there's going to be people that say, WWE isn't afraid of that. They don't care about that. They do care about that. They very much care about that. That's why they're not releasing anybody. That's why they're not, that's why they're going out and signing all this talent. That's why they have five brands. That's why they do all this stuff. They do not want other companies to have talent. Chris Jericho outright told Vince McMahon what AEW was and that he was signing there. So if you don't think that Vince McMahon knows what AEW is, you are sadly mistaken. The Revival are very obviously friendly with the Young Bucks. It is not a surprise that the people that I've spoken to within WWE expect them to go there. However, it should be noted, I am not saying they asked for their release. I was not a part of that conversation, assuming one took place. I was told, looks like they quit on Monday. WWE people then told me, yeah, there's a fear internally that they are done or are finishing up with the company. It's always possible that a bridge can be rebuilt. It is always possible that something can happen to kind of change the attitude of wrestlers, of management, of the office, all that. I was told by one person that they were in line for a push, asked that to another person, a wrestler, and they said, well, yeah, they were, but what does that mean in WWE? How long is a push? Things change from week to week. Pushes change from week to week. Ideas change from day to day. I mean, I interviewed Jimmy Jacobs recently, who told us about how Vince McMahon visited his mother in Houston, showed up late, and changed everything, and Roman Reigns had to be brought the changes on the concourse. So if you're saying, oh, The Revival were in line for a push, and you're telling me that, and I'm asking wrestlers, and they're saying, yeah, why, why, yeah, but what does that mean? That doesn't exactly ring in a bunch of confidence, and I was told there was a sense of optimism. I don't know if it's from The Revival. They're not talking, obviously. Their DMs aren't open. I don't have direct contact with either member of The Revival. I will attempt to make it, but I don't know that there was an overwhelming sense of optimism from them. But I know there was an overwhelming sense of optimism from people backstage that things would really change after Vince McMahon said they would change and after WWE Raw was set to go in this new era, and SmackDown, I should say. Now, what we have is a team who is one of the best teams in ring, period, ever in The Revival. Scott Dawson, Dash Wilder, they have been the subject of a long-running gag on Being the Elite. Not as much anymore, but it was FTR, which is what the Being the Elite cast had to say. It was implied that for legal reasons they had to say that, because prior they were saying, fuck The Revival. A little friendly poke at this team that was being called the best tag team in the world when the Young Bucks were also vying for that crown. The Young Bucks in early December said, mark my word, one day we will wrestle The Revival and everyone will rejoice. Well, then Trevor on Twitter at underscore S-O-D-U-T-W. I always have trouble remembering the order of those letters. Posted an image where one of the members of the Revival, has filed for a trademark on the term hashtag FTR, which would be brilliant because they can go by FTR. There's no reason they couldn't outside of WWE. Pro Wrestling Unlimited just told me that they looked up the trademark for The Revival, and there is none, just their individual names. So lots of room there, and you know that the Young Bucks and Cody are very savvy, and Kenny Omega are savvy about trademarks, with the Elite being a thing when the Bullet Club was going strong. And, I mean, we've seen that in the past. WWE has let stuff lapse or just failed to copyright it or trademark it, rather. Look at the Hart Foundation. MLW's going for that. War Games, MLW has it. It's interesting the way that that all unfolds. Now, the Revival have not been active on social media. Well, I should say Dash Wilder hasn't been. Dawson has been a little more active. They defeated Lucha House Party and... yeah, that's really all I have. But, well, besides the fact that a couple of people said, now, a release isn't guaranteed even if they asked for one. You might have a situation like Austin Aries, where we were told was pretty vocal about his unhappiness in WWE and was released, but then later said, hey, I didn't ask for my release. Well, people seem to think you wanted out, so you got out. Then you have Neville, who wanted out and wasn't let out for a year. So it really is a case-by-case basis. You never know how that's going to go. You never know what's going to happen. But that's what I was told. I tweeted the image, the top guys out image. Here's a funny story about that. When I was first told the story, I woke up rather late this morning and had to check on this story. A lot of the people that I talk to are traveling right now. They're going home. They're doing their thing. But I was like, I'll post something cryptically. And I just typed in The Revival WWE on Twitter in the GIF thing, and that was the first thing that popped up, them saying, top guys, out. Then other people started to poke around, so I was like, I better shore this up and post the story. Because I had people that I talked to saying, hey, people are asking me about this. I want to get your story up. So there we go. It was up on FightfulSelect.com. Early on. So, man, that's what we got going on here. Big news, especially from an in-ring perspective. I mean, I know a lot of you guys are going to look at the Revival and say, oh, who cares? Who cares? People care, man. People care. Let's get into the Fightful Wrestling Weekly. I mentioned me talking to Jimmy Jacobs. I spoke to him recently, and I've got more and more from him in the weekly. We broke down measuring WWE audience recently, mentioning crowd reactions, how people who attend live generally spend more money than any other fans, merchandise sales, social media responses, and more. Because we talked about, like, what does popularity mean in pro wrestling? What is it? Is it putting asses in seats? Well, the money doesn't necessarily reflect that. It seems to be drawing eyeballs to TV. But who's drawing eyeballs to TV? Because the viewership is dwindling. Well, is it drawing eyeballs to YouTube? Well, that's hard to say. You have an Alexa Bliss segment this week that did 2 million viewers. That's not going to put an ass in a seat. Who is going to buy a ticket because Alexa Bliss got walked in on halfway dressing? That's not what's going to happen. It might do a lot of clicks on YouTube videos, and it might sustain those clicks. Is it merchandise? Well, that's how you can nail down who is willing to spend a specific amount of money on a specific person. Social media response? Well, that's a good way to find out who is interested in what somebody has to say. I like Jimmy's take on the fabled casual fan. That there's this fabled casual fan that for some reason likes something that hardcore wrestling fans do not. That there is something that is reflected in the brain of Vince McMahon in particular, who lives in the most constructed WWE bubble that we have ever seen. He's so far deep into it, he didn't know what Scarface was when Razor Ramon came in. He doesn't know what a lot of that stuff is. But we're supposed to believe that he reflects the mind of a fabled casual fan. I mean, I can tell you guys, my wife is a casual fan, and she was like, hey, let me know when the UK women's title match is going on. My cousin's a very casual fan, and the first people that caught his eye on a 2K game was The Ascension and Kevin Owens. People who look like normal people or people who look nothing like normal people. So I'm inclined to agree with Jimmy Jacobs. I don't think there's this casual fan, quote unquote, that for somehow is counter to everything that WWE fans that watch every single week want. Now, I know you all have been told that by talking heads and pundits and people who are involved in the business in prior years. Oh, well, the reason there's dwindling ratings is because of this. All right, well, was Luther Reigns the answer? He looked like $1 million. No, he wasn't. Was John Cena the answer? Casual fans know him. But, I mean, in the Roman Reigns era, in the Daniel Bryan era, in the AJ Styles era, in that era, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, they're doing their biggest rights fees numbers ever. I am inclined to believe that what the people who watch the show every week like, you're generally going to find people who are quote-unquote casual fans, lapsed fans, who don't watch normally. If they find out something has a lot of buzz among people who actually like the show, they're probably more likely to tune in. That's my feeling on that. I have been pretty steadfast on that belief. I also asked Jimmy about specific instances where he recalls Vince McMahon changing his mind based on crowd or viewer reception. While he didn't say it was the crowd that changed Vince's mind, there were a lot of crowd-related circumstances that led to AJ Styles getting a major push after Vince McMahon wasn't sold on him, wasn't sure of him. There was the instance at the Royal Rumble where AJ Styles got that giant pop. And Vince was like, okay, well, it's his debut. It's in Orlando. People know him in Orlando. Will they know him anywhere else? Well, he never got a Royal Rumble type pop again, but the reaction stayed the same. The work was good. The promos were good. And right after WrestleMania, Jimmy Jacobs said, okay, well, we're figuring out an opponent for Roman Reigns, and common sense would tell you that it's Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, your top heels in the company. And Vince said, no, it's going to be AJ Styles. Vince McMahon, of all people, was like, you know what? I think we should go with this AJ Styles guy. He's a hot hand. He's what we got going. Funny enough, he had just lost to Jericho, who was in the running. But it was really interesting, man. That's not the type of thing you expect to hear about Vince McMahon because of the stereotypes, because of the things you always hear about him. And initially, he wasn't a believer of AJ Styles. He wasn't a believer of Daniel Bryan. Now he's a huge believer in both of them, to where they have a top program. Look at the people that have been working for the WWE title on SmackDown over the last year. Nakamura, he was brought in to the main roster because of a deal with DAZN. When they reached a deal with DAZN in Japan, DAZN in Japan was like, well, if we're going to broadcast your show, we would love Nakamura to be up. And WWE's like, ah, yeah, sure. I mean, that's not the entire reason, but that was a concession of them airing the show on DAZN, which is DAZN, by the way, the outlet that runs Bellator online. That was a part of the concession. Those numbers aren't too hot, but whatever. You had Samoa Joe working with AJ Styles all summer. Then you went into AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. It's wild, man. It's wild. I love it, though. You can't ever base every or all that you know on someone on just stereotypes. Sanjay Dutt, it's been over a year since Sanjay Dutt was put out of action since tearing his Achilles. He's worked backstage for Impact ever since then, and has done a little bit of commentary work, but it wasn't really a fit for him. I asked Ross Foreman and Josh Matthews about an update on Sanjay returning to the ring, but they had nothing on the situation. It doesn't seem like either side is in a rush to make it happen, but that's purely me reading into the situation. I've heard he's taken some WrestleMania weekend booking, so it looks like he's getting ahead of things and does plan on a return to the ring, but who knows? It might just be an appearance. WWE tryouts UFC veteran Eric Spicely fights this weekend. And James Lynch was able to talk to him. And he had a WWE tryout. Usually a fighter competing so soon after a tryout isn't really a good indication of them getting signed. He told Lynch that he's trained under NXT's Oney Lorcan to prepare for a pro wrestling career, and that Lorcan helped him get ready for the drills at the tryout. As for the tryout itself, Spicely said that he was put through the ringer, but that it wasn't as bad as a lot of people make it out to be, and that nerves didn't really get to him when he was participating. He said that it felt like another Ultimate Fighter tryout, which he's been through before. When he talked about the tryout itself, he said that it lasted about a week, started at 9 a.m. on the dot every morning, and went straight through to about 6 p.m. every evening. I've spoken about this on Raw and SmackDown pods in the past, but Lacey Evans, who just got called up to the main roster, helped put the tryouts on, serving as a drill instructor. She had experience as a Marine, but Spicely says that she would often scream at the participants who were taking breaks when they weren't supposed to, or were leaning on the ring during drills, you know, trying to get a breather in a way that she didn't think was fair. So you hear about how brutal the tryouts are and how vicious everything is, but Eric Spicely, who's fought in the UFC and didn't necessarily have the greatest run in the UFC, said it wasn't that bad. He'd been in the UFC for about almost 2 years. He did the Ultimate Fighter in January 2016, or maybe a little bit before that, and he was cut from the UFC after his May 2018 loss to Darren Stewart. But I mean, he fought some really good fighters. I mean, he beat Thiago Santos, who is an amazing fighter at light heavyweight. Got 50K in the making and did really good there. But Eric Spicely wasn't a guy that was exactly rolling in money. He was getting paid $14,000 to fight. Was flying all over the world, Brazil, the U.S., England to fight. And isn't the type of guy, when you look at him, 32-year-old guy out of Rhode Island. He's 6'2", probably about 205, 210. Isn't the type of guy that WWE just aches to get a hold of, but had some amazing insight on the tryouts, which is definitely worth the look. Had an update on the MLW status of some talent this week. MJF is still under a 2-year deal, which I would later learn, Dave Meltzer had already reported in The Observer. Full confession, guys, I don't read The Observer every week. I love what Dave does. He is the godfather of what I do, but I don't always read The Observer. I read it later in the week, and it happened to be after I had reached out to MLW about the contract status. So I didn't realize the MJF stuff was already in there. But I did get an exclusive on Joey Janela. He was never under contract to Major League Wrestling. He had worked throughout 2018 prior to his knee injury with MLW and was on a per-show basis. And I'm told is still on very good terms with MLW. In fact, they were happy for him, said that Joey Janela had worked really hard and deserved it and needed to be signed. From what I've heard, every AEW contract seems like it's different from the outside looking in. You have the Bucks and Cody who have signed 5-year deals and are in executive positions. You have Chris Jericho who signed 3-year exclusive deals except for New Japan. You have MJF who is still allowed to work MLW. You have Jericho who's still allowed to promote his cruises. You have Janela who is still allowed to promote his spring break shows. Then you have Britt Baker, who's allowed to continue her dental career. Because I don't know if you guys remember, I interviewed Britt Baker a while back, and she was under a 1-year dental contract. It's wild. It's interesting. One thing you'll never hear me say in an article is, it will be interesting to see. Well, no shit, it will be interesting to see. That's why we're talking about it. That's why there's an article on it. Oh, well. Women of Wrestling on Access got a lot on this. David McLean, I spoke to him. They are launching this Friday on Access. And they have a lot of support. For a women's wrestling vanity project, this has some really important people behind it. It has David McLean, who was the creator of GLOW and WOW Women of Wrestling. It has Jeannie Buss, the owner of the Los Angeles Lakers. It has Mark Cuban, the owner of Access TV, and the owner of the Dallas Maverick, and Mark Burnett, who you probably know for putting together Lucha Underground and just tons of other shows. So if it doesn't work out, it's not for lack of resources and push. I know that Jeannie Buss had Tessa Blanchard at Lakers games doing press and stuff like that. They're trying real hard. They're going for a big media push. I spoke to David McLean, who created GLOW and actually sold it after season two was taped. And he said that this is the real vision of GLOW that he wanted. And it's coming true with WOW Women of Wrestling. He drew a lot of parallels to the GLOW series about how colorful the costumes are and the personalities are, but said that the athletes of today are much more advanced and give them a lot of flexibility that they really needed in the 1980s, but they didn't have. You kind of see that on the GLOW television series, where some of the actresses are portraying people who themselves weren't that well-versed in the ring, who weren't that good to go in the ring, who needed some extra training. That's not the case here. You've got the likes of Tessa Blanchard wrestling here. You're going to have a lot of really experienced women in here. You're probably going to have some inexperienced people too, though. McLean told me that WOW Women of Wrestling went out of their way to ask the viewers who were at their first TV tapings to not post the results online. I don't know if there was any legal implications. I can tell you that Lucha Underground did this too. And when a person who was at their last tapings disclosed this to a third party, they threatened that third party with a lawsuit because they said that they violated some NDA. Now, that third party is not subject to an NDA. That other party is. We had one third party reach out to us and give us the spoilers, which I ran easily because I knew Lucha Underground can't sue us for this. They're not going to do shit. Now, I don't know if that was something for WOW Women of Wrestling because they seem like they don't want to threaten fans like that. It's more of a gentle request. Hey, guys, if you want to support this show even more, don't post spoilers out there. Hey, I do it here. If you guys want to support Fightful Select, don't post our private links out there.
Kristen Ashley.
Little inside baseball ski for you there. But yeah, that's why the results haven't emerged yet. He credited the fans for wanting to see WOW succeed as a factor in why none of the results or footage have emerged since then. The original WOW deal is for 8 1-hour episodes, but the goal is 26 1-hour episodes. They're hoping to learn from the first 8, reassess, and then create more so they can get into the international TV market. He wants to increase that number in year 2 and eventually start running live shows like New Japan is doing on Access. WOW has done a lot of surveying and questioning and research ahead of launching their show in order to find out what fans want. Now, when I got the first look, and I got the first look really, really early, so early, in fact, that I posted it and their PR lady told me to post it, then had to come back and say, wait, we're not ready to post that yet. I think Tessa was supposed to break that or something like that. But a woman by the name of Jungle Girl stood out. She's been an original since the early days of WOW. I think she's in her 40s, and she looks like $1 million, man. She just looks different, and she's jacked, and she stood out to me, and I asked about her. David McLean put her over big and said the fact that she isn't out on the indie circuit, she got high praise from others on the show as one of the top talents they've worked with, period. She has a real throwback look and is a physical specimen. And man, that I can't tell you how much she stood out. I'm excited to see her wrestle. Now, some of WOW in the past has been really criticized for lacking ring psychology, and that's by me in particular, specifically as it pertains to pinfalls. When somebody's got their shoulders on the mat, you're supposed to pin them. That's the point of a match. Having a lot of standing around waiting for spots to happen, even though they have the ability to heavily edit this. So this debut will answer a lot of questions about how far they've come, and to retain a New Japan audience, they're going to need to clean up a lot of those weaknesses. In my opinion. So we have contract news. Pardon me. Let's go ahead and get into that. WWE. This year, we have contracts expiring for Mauro Ranallo in June. Jim Ross in March. Stephanie McMahon as an on-screen talent on October 7th. AJ Styles in April. Shinsuke Nakamura reportedly this year. And the Good Brothers in September. Next year in 2020, we have Mojo Rawley, Mandy Rose in late 2020, Rey Mysterio in October 2020. Also, Paige is reportedly up this year. In 2021, we have Jerry Lawler. He just signed a new two-year deal, said that he is receiving a raise. So he'll be signed through his 70s. Also, Big Show is signed through the spring of 2021. Kevin Owens is signed at minimum through April 2023 as he signed a five-year deal in 2018. Recent news, Trevor Lee announced that he has signed with the company. He is going to finish up with CWF Mid-Atlantic, but says that he is not going to finish up until he loses the title. I will speculate that that will be at their February 2nd show. All Elite Wrestling. Chris Jericho said that he signed a three-year deal through 2021. Young Bucks and Cody are signed through January 2024. It should be noted that there is some lenience in these contracts, which I will get into later. New Japan and Ring of Honor, Kenny Omega signed through the end of the month. Jim Ross and Josh Barnett's deals with Access are up this month. Kushida is finishing up with New Japan this month. Madison Rayne is signed with Ring of Honor through September 2019. Kota Ibushi still working as a freelancer. Michael Elgin, currently out with an injury, signed through January 2020. Beer City Bruiser with Ring of Honor through 2019. Silas Young through 2021. Flip Gordon also recently sidelined at least until 2020. Rocky Romero, a multi-year deal in January, puts him through 2021, as does Chase Owens, I'm told. Now, other news. David Finlay started with Ring of Honor. Tracy Williams and Rush have signed with Ring of Honor. This helps pull Rush from MLW. At least MLW says it's from another promotion. But a big one is Juice Robinson, who signed a three-year deal through January 2022. But because of that, he also is now working Ring of Honor, and he is going to be a big player in Ring of Honor. He debuted a major stable called, I think it's Bloodline. And that's going to be a big deal for Ring of Honor. That is one that helps out all involved. He's going to become a big presence in America. He's going to be a big presence in New Japan. Over at Impact Wrestling, Moose is signed through July 2020. Lucha Underground, we're told that Pentagon and Phoenix has season 5 out clauses. Shane Strickland, his contract expired. He said he was a free agent this week. Eva Lise has gone public asking for her release. Joey Ryan has backed her up. A lot of people say, oh, well, she has a contract. She should have stuck with it. Joey Ryan said that Lucha Underground told them that they would grant releases after season 4 as long as they worked season 4 and did the non-compete. Jeff Cobb got out after season 4. Shane Strickland got out after season 4. Eva Lise wants out, obviously to sign somewhere else. She has not made that a secret. MLW. Pentagon through 2019, as is Ray Phoenix, Selena as well. Davey Boy Smith Jr. is at minimum through 2020. MJF is in the middle of a two-year deal. Injury report on Raw. Roman Reigns announced he was battling leukemia October 22nd, sidelined indefinitely. An image has surfaced of him. He looks great. Best wishes to him. Roman Reigns, elbow surgery, November 26th. He was booked for the Royal Rumble, now removed from that match. Triple H tore his pec on November 2nd, had surgery 4 days later. He's working as an on-screen authority figure. Alexa Bliss has been sidelined since October 20th with a concussion. Mark Henry initially said she was cleared, but she has not worked since then. She's doing talk show segments on Raw now. Jason Jordan has been out for a year with neck surgery. He's working as a producer. Fandango tore his left labrum in early July. He's sidelined until early this year. He's appearing on WWE digital properties and training for his return. Kevin Owens, double knee surgery in October. They thought he was going to be out 4 to 8 months. Vignettes are airing for his return. His name on Twitter went from soon to soon-ish. he has dropped a lot of weight, so good for him. Sami Zayn, double shoulder surgery in June. Vignettes are airing for his return, but he said in November he wasn't close to being cleared, but he's training at the Performance Center now. Goldust, double knee surgery in July, working as a talent scout, said the end of his career is coming soon. Rowan and Harper, according to PW Insider, are cleared to return after being out of action. Rowan since August. with a torn right bicep that caused them to lose the tag titles. Harper had wrist surgery and underwent surgery. He had wrist surgery. Sin Cara said to be cleared. He had knee surgery August 14th. Ty Dillinger sustained a hand injury October 29th. Started rehab on December 3rd for his surgery. Over in NXT, Tegan Nox, ACL, MCL, LCL, and both meniscuses torn, dislocated her kneecap, no timetable for a return. They're not expecting her back this year. Tino Sabatelli tore his pec muscle in late April, requires surgery, out until early this year. Dakota Kai suffered a knee injury on December 7th, which is feared to be a torn ACL, but she was seen walking in a brace earlier this month. Eric Bugenhagen has a concussion. He is appearing on WWE Digital Properties as well. AEW. Joey Janela claimed he was sidelined for up to a year after a September 2018 knee injury. Likely that is a work to hide his signing. Cody Rhodes had been working with a torn meniscus. Surgery planned soon. Impact Wrestling. Rosemary sustained an undisclosed knee injury in February and has not wrestled since March. Returned at the Impact pay-per-view, but hasn't wrestled yet on tapings or otherwise. Sanjay Dutt tore his right Achilles tendon, as I mentioned. His return is unknown. Missed all of 2018. Ring of Honor, New Japan. Shibata has that subdural hematoma. His in-ring return is unlikely, although he is committed to one. He's doing some meet-and-greets for Ring of Honor. Hikuleo sustained an ACL injury on March 3rd. Tama Tonga told me today that he is coming back next month. Hiromu Takahashi landed on his neck. Hospitalized on July 7th. Back in Japan after that, will not require surgery. Fans are expecting him back this year. No word from New Japan. Tennille Dashwood had shoulder surgery in October. Sidelined until this year, but she has appeared in that Bloodline stable. Michael Elgin with a knee injury in November 30th that caused knee surgery on December 20th. He's going to be out several months. Kota Ibushi has been pulled from this month's events in New Japan since he sustained a concussion at the Tokyo Dome. Chris Sabin, knee injury on January 12th, feared to be a torn ACL. That would be a third one for him. Man, that guy cannot stay healthy, especially with his knees. That is a bummer. Flip Gordon, believed to have sprained his MCL. He is out for at least 4 weeks after sustaining that on January 13th. Yoshihashi recently returned from his injury. He had been out for several months. Marco Stunt broke his leg, MLW talent recovering here. Broke his leg on November 17th, had surgery. Jason Cade broke his ankle, hadn't wrestled since November 17th, and was pulled from the 12-14 MLW show. Lawler, Phoenix, Joey Ryan, all cleared for MLW. Others, Vanessa Craven broke her leg in late October and requires surgery. Swervo hospitalized in November with a blood clot after being hit with a goddamn cinder block. That's the Fightful Report podcast, my friends. Spread the word. Let people know. I love you guys. We're out.